Let me reorient us. Okay, so welcome everyone to Tirchuta Tzibura Part 2. There may be a number of parts to this series depending on how often I come back to do it, but here's what we hope to address this evening. Number one, we will do a relatively brief chazara. It won't be as brief as other times because it's been about a month since we did the previous installment, the first installment of this year. So we'll do a little bit of chazara and review what we learned together last time. That way, for anyone who wasn't with us especially, it'll be your first time hearing it. Number two, we will finish the first source sheet that we were learning together, where we will talk about how a tzibur, a congregation, are they able to be mochel, are they able to forgo a breach in their own dignity? So we're going to actually talk about an example. We'll touch on it briefly. One example we mentioned is a child who's 13 years old, halakhically able to lead davening, but you know, doesn't look like a mature adult yet. So are you allowed to have that kid lead davening? Then also women leaning, women reading from Torah was a second example. And then God willing, if we do have time afterwards, I would like to start looking at another question within Tirchuta Tzibura, which is the question of how long it needs to pass in order for something to constitute Tirchuta Tzibura. Is it 2 seconds? Is it a few minutes? Is it, depending on what the situation is like? So that's what I hope to address. So anyway, let me just bring up the source sheet and we'll jump right into it. So here we go. Okay, we could see the sheet, right? So let's jump. Let me zoom in a little bit so that way you guys can see a little better. It's going to be mostly in Hebrew. I apologize, but I made this some time ago. It was that was the audience was made for, but I'll translate. Anyway, so what we learned last time is that Tirchuta Tzibura, what's Tirchuta Tzibura? Tirchuta Tzibura literally means an imposition, usually on the time of a congregation. There's debate of whether this is limited to the context of the synagogue, but many posts and many rabbis believe that if you have 10 people that come together and you impose on their time, that is a breach of Tirchuta Tzibura. So we gave a few examples. One of them, most notably, we're not going to go through all of them.
Want me to get you a chair?
What was that? The most notable one comes up in Yoma, which we said is that the Kohen Gadol, this is very relevant because we have Yom Kippur coming up next week. So we'll get in a little bit of Torah about Yom Kippur this evening. So on Yom Kippur, we read from Sefer Vayikra from the book of Leviticus, and we read from Sefer Bamidbar, the book of Numbers. And the Kohen Gadol, the high priest on Yom Kippur, he would read from Vayikra inside, but then when he got to Bamidbar, instead of rolling the Torah to Sefer Bamidbar to the next book of the five books of Moses, instead, what would he do? He'd read the rest out loud from memory. Why? So as not to impose an issue on the Kavod HaTzibur, or the dignity of the people present, by imposing on their time, because they would have to wait, twiddling their thumbs, while the Kohen rolled to Sefer Bamidbar. That's one of the paradigmatic examples of Tzibura. We spent a little time talking about the definition of Tirchuta Tzibura. We're going to get more into that later. Then also, we had a few questions, which is, why is it that when you look at it, the Kohen Gadol in the temple on Yom Kippur, he was able to just say, you know what, it's taking too much time. We're just going to read Baal Peh. We're not going to read Kriyas HaTorah from the Torah scroll itself. Yet, in a regular synagogue on a typical Shabbos, if you're only have one Sefer Torah and you have to lane Maftir, you do have to roll the Sefer Torah. So we gave a few answers to that. But the most important answer for our purposes this evening is found in the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, in the Beis HaMikdash, all the Jewish people were trying to gather there. We can't assume that such a large group would be willing to be mochel, would be willing to forgo a Tirchuta Tzibura. But when it comes to a typical shul on a regular Shabbos, for whatever reason, we assume that, yeah, they're willing to be mochel. They're willing to forgo a few minutes. That way they can fulfill the mitzvah the best way possible. And what we really, what we're going to go down right now is the rabbit hole of the question that the Magen Avraham implicitly takes a position on. The Magen Avraham implicitly tells us that if there is a breach of Kavod HaTzibur, so if you remember, right now we're assuming that Tirchus HaTzibur is the negative, Kavod HaTzibur is the positive side of the coin. Tirchus HaTzibur is an imposition on the congregation. Kavod HaTzibur is the dignity, respect for the congregation. So naturally, when you impose on a congregation's time, when you make them sit around idly twiddling their thumbs, that is a breach. You're disrespecting the congregation. So we can see how Tirchus HaTzibur and Kavod HaTzibur really look like two sides of the same coin. And the Magen Avraham tells us that HaTzibur has the power to say, you know what? We're okay with that breach of dignity. We're willing to give that a pass. The same way that HaTzibur, a congregation, is able to say, you know what? It's fine. You're able to roll the Sefer Torah. We'll wait a few minutes. So, however, though, it is really not clear if a tzibur, if a congregation could just choose to be mocho, could choose to say, you know what? We don't care about our honor. We're all humble people. It's a seres mechuva now. You know, we're not going to, like, be so mock. We have put our foot down, complain when every little detail mini doesn't go the way that we were brought up on, right? So we're willing to be understanding of people now. Are they allowed to forgo their dignity, Kavod HaTzibur, whenever they choose? That's the question we're going to delve in further right now. Just any questions on the material that we skimmed over and reviewed up until this point?
Who's the they? How do you decide who composes the they? Is it the whole congregation? Is it?
It's presumably based off majority of the congregation, though. The congregation could also choose representatives. So what most shuls do is they appoint a ritual committee, because it would be very, for a few considerations. One is that people on ritual committee hopefully have a general idea of the basic halachos and basic idea of what davening is supposed to look like. But also, it's if we had everyone vote on every decision in the shul, you would be getting like 3 emails a day, which I know you were already getting this time of year. But so usually we allow a ritual committee, which are representative, hopefully, of the interests of people in the shul, to weigh in and to give their ideas. But in its purest form, presumably, the congregation is based on what the majority of the congregants deem to be a Kavod HaTzibur for them, deem to be a Tirchus HaTzibur for them. That's
so
generally
it's all pre-planned.
What was that?
It's all pre-planned.
Well,
with how far you can go with the tircha.
I guess so. I mean, you know, sometimes you have tircha and tzibur on the spot. You know, tircha and tzibur, we'll talk about, God willing, next time about, you know, let's say a chaz and a schlepping. So that's not pre-planned, right? You know, even what we're doing, I have a meeting at 9 o'clock with all the Baalei Tefillah for Yom Kippur. So part of what I'm doing when I meet with them is I'm giving them literally a timeline of where they should be up to at each part of davening, and we cut out parts of davening. So, you know, it could come up during davening where a chazan just schleps, and that could be a tirchus HaTzibur as well. Anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
What was that?
Thank you.
Yes. I'm just doing my best. I'm really just selfish because I don't want to sit through a whole long davening either, but that's another point.
Well, we know what time we should be eating.
On Yom Kippur? Oh, yes, 7:34, I believe. But you can check my Zman, but I believe 7:34.
After the fast.
Fast ends 7:34 at the end of Yom Kippur, I believe. But check my Zman to be sure. Anyway, so here's the thing. What's a good case? There's a case where a child who became 13 years old, he's at bar mitzvah, he could lead davening, he could be motzi, could include other people in his davening, in his brachos. However, most 13-year-olds, they don't have the persona is the wrong word, or complexion of someone who is a mature adult yet, right? Maybe they have, like, you know, for boys, they're just starting to try to grow a mustache or whatever it is. So if a child doesn't look like he's an adult yet, like he's mature yet, then there's a debate if he could serve as chazen. So just to be clear, so the Beis Yosef says, according to the Rambam, they're able to be mochel. The tzibur can say, look, you know, really be more respectable for us to have someone who is, you know, a full adult lead davening for us. But you know what? We're okay with that. The kid needs experience. If he doesn't get to daven now, he'll be afraid to do it when he's older, right? All the considerations that we think of today. But just to be clear, so the Rush is saying, the Rush who's against, who says that you cannot appoint a child to be the chazan of the congregation, what are we talking about? We're talking about making him the official chazan. Imagine we hire a 13-year-old boy as the cantor for our shul. That'd be crazy, right? I mean, obviously, in the more, I guess, yeshivish world, that'd be okay, because what they do in Jewish music today, Jewish pop music, is because since you can't have women singing, they use prepubescent children to play the woman's role in terms of having a higher pitched voice. And you can tell I have opinions on that, but we'll leave that for another time. So you can't have a child be the official chazan of the congregation, but every now and then you can have him come up as well. But the point is that there is a debate if the tzibur is allowed to say, you know what, we're okay with a child leading. We're not so makbid. We're not so pedantic about having an adult, a full adult doing it each time. If he's halachically bar mitzvah, we're good with that. So here's the thing. So if you look at, so there's a few opinions as to why it might be problematic for a, why a tzibur would not be able to forgo its right to let a child go up there. There are reasons why a tzibur would not be able to be mochel, would not be able to forgo its kavod, forgo its honor, even if it wants to. Can anyone think of why? Because I would say, right, if it's about my dignity, then I should be able to be mochel on my dignity. I should be able to forgo my dignity, right? So if someone is only treating me in a certain way out of respect for me, it's my prerogative to forgo my own honor, my own kavod. So it seems like a really odd position. If the whole reason a child would not be able to lead davening is because, I mean, a 13-year-old child, we're saying halachically an adult, would not be able to lead davening because it is an infringement, it's an infraction of kavod atzi, or the dignity of the congregation. Well, if it's just a infraction on their own kavod, shouldn't it be their prerogative to choose whether they want to forgo their own kavod? So what's the other side of the debate? Why wouldn't they be able to? Can anyone guess? Any logic or reason why that'd be true?
Well, you said before that if the person that was post bar mitzvah looked more older than a younger person, then the younger person would feel bad if they saw that the other person was allowed to do it. But again, they might not even understand at that age what they're doing, and they're davening for the congregation.
Ah, very good. So, Dawn, we're going to get to your idea a little later, which is that, you know, we're going to question whether a child is really, you know, forget about it. It's not really about his looks, but, you know, does he really understand the weight, the gravity of what it means to be a representative of the congregation before a Kaddish Baruch Hu, before God. Very good. Any other? I'll take one more. Does anyone else have any suggestions as to why can't I forgo my own kavod? Why can't I forgo my own honor when I want to? Any thoughts on that? Okay. So here's a few reasons. One comes up in the response of Beis Lechem Yehuda. He says follows. You know, there's another person, an individual in halacha, who's not able to forgo his own honor. Who is that? Well, that is a king. A king is not allowed to forgo his own honor. So we have this idea similar to a king. A king's honor is not just about him as an individual, but it's about the office of the king, the office of the melech, the office of the leader of the Jewish people. So it's not about his own individual honor. It's about the office as an institution. So in a very similar way, the Beis Yehuda tries to draw an analogy from a king not being able to forgo his own kavod to a tzibur, to a congregation not being able to forgo its own kavod. Mistama machlok vonavafa pikin kamar de enu chola tzibur noso. a congregation cannot appoint a child as their cantor. Why are they not able to? A congregation is treated, they are regarded like a king is in halacha. So the same way, he uses it as a model, the same way a king is not allowed to choose to forgo his own honor, because it's not just about him as an individual. So too, the congregation, it's not so much about the individuals that make up the congregation, so much as the congregation as an institution. They are not able to forgo their own honor. In a similar vein, but not completely, I couldn't really locate the tshuva. I had a hard time finding exactly where it was, but it's cited in a book called Yikara Ditzibura, which is literally an entire likud. It's an anthology of the sources on Tirchut Tzibura and Kavod HaTzibur. I found many of the sources in this book. It's essentially like a mini encyclopedia of this entire topic. So he says, why can't the congregation forgo their own honor? Why? Because what happens? Does anyone know why getting a minion together is so important? Why you can't say certain things without a minion? What's special about having 10 men come together? What occurs metaphysically when 10 men gather to daven?
God is more present, all right? You know.
Very good, Phyllis. So the Shekhinah, God's divine presence, rests upon that congregation when 10 men gather for a minyan. That's what we say when I remember always being told, you know, my Rebbein would emphasize when we were younger, when I was in school, so the 10th guy would walk in for a minyan and say, oh, you just brought in the Shekhinah, you brought in the divine presence with you. And I always say, I don't know, that doesn't seem fair. You know, I showed up right at the beginning of minyan. I was the third guy, you know, and then this guy comes in, you know, a few minutes late, and he's the 10th guy, and he gets to have the Shekhinah come in with him. You know, he gets that status. Didn't seem quite fair to me, at least. You know, I don't know, maybe you think otherwise. But anyway, the point is that it's not just the congregation that is here. When there is a congregation, when there's a minyan present, God is there as well. Therefore, and we're going to elaborate on this in a moment, it's not about just the individuals that make up the congregation, their own individual kavod, but it's about actually the entire, not just the congregation itself, but the Shekhinah, but God who is with them. So this can answer the question. Even if you're willing to say that the members of the congregation could forgo their own individual honor, it's their prerogative to do so, it's for their own benefit, they can't be mochel, they can't say, you know what, we'll be lenient, we'll take a pass, everything's okay, Shalom Yisrael, when it's the Shekhinah, when it's God's dignity that is at stake over here. And this is the idea that the Taz says as well, where he says, Lo mahani mechila, Devale kavod hatzibur zehu kavod shamayim. Because why? Coming back to the case of the child, when you let this little child over here, you know, he just got his first pair of tefillin and he's going to be the cantor of the shul, when he gets to become the cantor, it's not just the congregation's honor that is at stake. But what are we doing here in shul? We're not here just to entertain ourselves. We're not here, you know, just to listen to tunes because we enjoy them. I mean, I'm sure we can enjoy the tunes also. That's fine. But we're here primarily for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the sake of God. We are here to worship God. And we have no right to forgo God's kavod, God's honor. And this is, it's very sharply written by the Bach, where he says as follows. He brings this point home. L'fian yes daiti. Let me zoom in a little bit in case anyone wants to read this along. This is a great piece right here. Near Da'afla Ramava Rashba Lomahani Mechias Sibor. When it comes to this case, you can the Sibor, the congregation cannot forgo its own honor. Why? The ain't perish bnei kavod hatzibur shu kineged kvodam, lifnei bnei adam shetobo mechias sibor. This is not just about them as human beings. El appear shu'ainza kavod hatzibur she shavlufav yisale mi she'ain lo hadras pun lohalitz ad sibor. Rather, it's because what's the message we're sending when we send this tiny little child who just made it to bar mitzvah? He's in seventh grade now, and you're putting him up as the representative of the entire congregation. We don't think of this sometimes. Sometimes, sometimes you see people, they begrudgingly go up there as the shliach tzibur to lead davening. But actually, leading davening, it's a huge honor, because that means we are choosing you to represent us before God. So think of it this way, he says. Da'af lifnei melech basar v'dam, ein shulchan l'halot al tzibur, afilu chacham gadol. We would never send a 13-year-old boy. Imagine we are, we're lobbying on behalf of the Jewish community. We are advocating for the needs, for the sick. We're advocating for policies to help the Jewish community, right? We're going to drive by bicultural one day. We'll pluck some little kid out of the seventh grade class and say, all right, we're putting you up there. You're going to talk to the president for us. You're going to talk to the governor for us. You're going to talk to the mayor for us. No, that's not who we pick. We don't pick a little child to do that. Even if he's a prodigy, even if he's a smart, intelligent kid, you don't pick a child. So if he doesn't look, at least look like an adult yet. If we wouldn't do that before a human being, if that's considered a slight to a human being's honor to send a little kid to be the advocate, to be the representative, certainly, kavachomer, before God himself, we should definitely think twice before sending up a child. The vize ain't makom klal lomar demahani limnoso kishrotzu at tzibur limcho akvodam, because they can't forgo the tzibur's honor, congregation's honor. This is objectively an affront to God's honor, because if you're not going to send this person as a representative before a dignitary, before someone with power who's merely a human being, then what's the message you're sending when you put someone like this, a child, in front of God? What does that say about how we are machshiv, how we view tefillah and our communication with God in shul? That's the musr that the Bach is giving over here, in a very scathing rebuke that he fits in to his piece over here on Tircha d'Tzibura. Therefore, when we say that a congregation cannot forgo its honor, we have to talk about two different cases. If a tzibur says, you know what, there's a lot of really nice piyutim in the art scroll machzer, and if you look in the back, there's even extra piyutim for high holidays, and somehow you have a congregation that comes to this conclusion, I don't think it's going to be ours, by the way, spoiler alert, that they want to add in extra upon extra piyutim, extra liturgy, the high holiday prayers, you know what, that's has nothing to do with God's honor if they want to take on extra time to be in shul. That's not an affront to God's kavod. So there, they could say, you know what, we're willing to be mocha, because there, it's only an issue of tircha d'tzibura. It's only an issue of imposing time on the congregation. But the term kavod ha-tzibur, that requires more analysis. Until this point, I created a bit of a straw man of sorts. We've assumed that Tircha d'Tzibura and Kavod HaTzibur are two sides of the same coin. Tircha d'Tzibura is the negative. It's an imposition on Tzibur's time. Kavod HaTzibur is the positive, to be careful about the Tzibur, about the congregation's time. But Kavod HaTzibur can be much more than that. Kavod HaTzibur, the honor of the congregation, literally that's what it means, the honor of the congregation, that sometimes, like in the case of the Kohen reading the Torah on Yom Kippur, that sometimes has to do with the time of the congregation, with not leaving them idle, twiddling their thumbs. But sometimes Kavod HaTzibur is not referring to the congregation themselves, but to the congregation as an institution of worshiping God. Therefore, it alludes actually not just to the Kavod HaTzibur, but to Kavod Shemaim, to the honor of God, the honor of heaven. And there, the congregation could say, machalach, 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 all they want. It's not going to work, because it's not their prerogative to be mochel, to forgo God's honor. That's not up to us.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Are we talking about all davening or just particular davening, like on the Yamim Noraim or Yom Tov? Are we talking about weekly Shabbos?
So, okay, good. So God willing, we will, in the next installment of this, we're going to look at specific examples of what kind of davening could be Tirchut Tzibura, right? Because Shemona Esrei and Kriya Shema obviously are not Tirchut Tzibura because those are obligatory. Those are the meat and potatoes of davening. But we'll talk about, you know, extra Misha Beirachs, Piyutim, as I said before, extra things that are thrown into davening that take up more time that could potentially be Tirchut Tzibura. But just to give you an example, because you asked, let's say someone goes up to the Torah and they want like this whole long Misha Beirach where they include their mother, their father, their wife, their, you know, their aunt, their dog, their dog's aunt, you know, yeah, whatever they want. So it's it very potentially can become Tirchut Tzibura. On the other hand, it's a good fundraiser for the shul. So, you know, those are things that have to get balanced out.
What about the, I don't know where it comes from, that a chazan is supposed to have a nice voice and he's supposed to be married?
So you're talking about high holidays, right?
Well, that's why I asked you now.
Are
you talking about high holidays or other?
We're talking about general. I use Yom Kippur as an example because that's actually the example in the Gemara, and it's very timely for us, of course.
Well, I know.
Being married, for instance, just to address because you brought it up, I believe it traces back to the Kohen Gadol, the high priest himself. He was supposed to be married because he's supposed to pray Ba'adova ad Beso, not just for himself, but he should have Beso, bias, the house, refers to his wife, who's presumably in the house. That's usually how they make that reference. So I think somehow the requirements of the Kohen Gadol, who was the representative of the Jewish people back in the times of the temple, we take some of those requirements and also make our own representative, our own Shliach Tzibur on Yom Kippur, follow similar kind of requirements, though not exactly.
How about Kolona'e?
What?
Kolona'e. It says.
Right, so we'll talk about it. We're going to look at a tshuva of the Rashba next time, which we'll talk and Shulchan Aruch Paskin's idea of having a nice voice, someone that the congregation wants to listen to. There's no inherent quality because a nice voice is subjective, but obviously, generally, this high holidays, I was recruited to daven because we got so desperate. So,
not bad, not bad.
Yeah. Oh, you were with us. That's right, Phyllis. Right. Yes. Okay. So, you know, we made it work. We made it work. Yeah. Thank God. Anyway, but let's just get back to the subject at hand. So any questions just on Kavanat Tzibur, Tirchut Tzibur before we look at the final section of this sheet?
Does any of this relate to or have this parallel with Kibbud Av V'Em? You know, for example, you say like the father can't, he's not supposed to let his child sit in his seat, even if it's fine with him, but he's not supposed to. Is that a similar concept in a way that, you know, to maintain the integrity of the institution of the family or, you know, that kind of thing?
Right. So that's, it's not, I like what you're thinking. And also a similar thing, because you're thinking that Sugyan Kiddushin, the Gemara there in Kiddushin. So also similar with Kavod Harav, with respect to a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar. Mm-hmm. So both when it comes to the parents and when it comes to Torah scholars, there is a minimum amount that needs to be, that is due to them. So if I'm not mistaken, when it comes to the parents, they can be mochel and say, you know, you don't have to show Kavod, you know, you don't have to go ahead and serve me water or pour me wine. You don't need to go ahead and do it. But then there's just general morad, there's general reverence that is due to them. So reverence is not something that they're supposed to be mocha, they're supposed to forgo, because I think similar to what you're saying, Toby, that's about the just institution of what a family is supposed to look like according to Judaism, that children are supposed to respect their parents and have a certain level of reverence for them. Which, by the way, I just want to, this is a term that people mistranslate. I'm just, you didn't, I'm bringing it up now. The term Yira, everyone says Yiras Hashem refers to fear of God. Sometimes it means fear, but other times it just means, I think reverence is a better translation times. You're supposed to have reverence for a great rabbi, reverence for your parents, reverence for God. So it's not like you're supposed to be, you know, cowering in fear all the time. But I think reverence is like the right term, and reverence is required. But going, you know, certain services, though, parents could say, you know, I'm okay pouring my own wine. You don't have to do that for me. So that's the idea about the seat. There definitely is, you know, if we were looking at the broader concept of kavod, which I think we'll do toward the end of this Tirchut Tzibur series, we will delve into that a little bit more. Okay. We're going to do one last section. So all I could say is that this will not jive well with anyone who is brought up on Western American modern sensitivities, more so than the usual things that we learn. That being said, I'd be a bad teacher if I ignored and censored all the material that people don't want to hear. Instead, my goal is try to provide material that is out there and teach it the best way I can, and well, hopefully we'll make of it what we will. All right, with that introduction. So now we are going to talk about a fairly controversial topic, and we're not going to go through all the literature on this. Not at all. That deserves its own series, which is women reading from the Torah. The Gemara in Megillah, quoting a Tosefta, says as follows. Tanu Rabbanan, hakol olin leminyan shiva va'afilu katan. So anyone could read from the Torah, even a katan, even a shava, filu isha, even a woman could read, could get one of the aliyahs to the Torah. Abul amru chacham, but the rabbi said, nonetheless, isha lo tzikra b'torah v'nei kavod atzibur. A woman should not read from the Torah. Why? Here's the term. Mipnei kavod hatzibur. Now, based on everything we just learned and all that discourse we went through about defining and figuring out the parameters of kavod hatzibur, what would you say about the nature of this ban that the rabbis made, that a woman cannot read from the Torah or a child cannot read because of kavod hatzibur?
Never could understand it.
Well, does kavod hatzibur imply flexibility or rigidity? What would you say?
It sounds like rigidity.
Okay.
They shouldn't be embarrassed. Somebody shouldn't be embarrassed that a woman is reading, or a young child that may be better or read better than the usual people who are there.
Okay, so I mean that's probably what the idea behind it is. But remember, we just had a machlokus. We just spent time talking about how there is a dispute whether a tzibor can be mochel, can forgo their kavod hatzibor, the dignity of the congregation. So when the rabbis say that a woman cannot read from the Torah, she can't get an aliyah because kavod hatzibor, well, I would think, let's take that argument that we had, that dispute about a child, a 13-year-old boy leading davening, and plug it in over here. So the Magen Avraham school of thought, I would think, would say that a tzibor, a congregation, could be mochel, could forgo their honor and say, you know what, in our congregation, women do whatever they're able to do. We're okay. We don't see it as an affront to the dignity of the congregation to have both men and women participating in Torah reading. So I would, you know, I'm not saying the Magen Avraham would say that, but I'm saying if we take the principle of the Magen Avraham, one can make that argument. However, if you take the approach of the Bach, you take the approach of many of the sources we saw before, that a congregation cannot be mochel on its own dignity, then it's much harder to make that argument that this is something that could change. And the question it comes to is if kavod hatzibur is just a subjective concern of the congregation, or if kavod hatzibur, like we said before, alludes to a more objective standard, meaning that God wants things a certain way, and the congregation, even though we use the term kavod hatzibur, they have no right to be mochel on God's dignity, on God's honor. So the question that comes out from here, though, is that, well, is there a breach of kavod shemayim, of God's honor, if a woman gets an aliyah to the Torah? What would you say?
I don't remember ever that Hashem said no to a woman who wanted to read the Torah.
So get ready for this, Phyllis, because
the men said no, but God didn't.
Well, wait, to qualify the question, are we talking about women reading it in a minyan, in a shul, as opposed to just like reading it in the course of a class, let's say?
We're talking about the former.
So then why do you even have to get into Kavodat Tzibur? I mean, doesn't it come down to, you know, whether a woman can fulfill an obligation for the men to hear the Torah if she herself is not obligated in it herself?
Well, that's all.
Don't we get into those kind of questions?
So let's look back at the source. I mean, that's the whole point. The point of the source, if we look at it, is more closely, is that really a woman can lane. A woman would be able to do Kriyas HaTorah. Hakol Olin Laminyan Shiva. All of these people could be included, could get an aliyah. And when we say get an aliyah back in ancient times, that didn't mean just saying the brachos before and afterwards. That meant you laned your aliyah. Many Sephardim still do that today, actually. So when it says a child or a woman could lane, that means that they were able to get an aliyah. They were able to lane in front of the congregation on Shabbos. They're included in one of the seven aliyahs. But only because of Kavod HaTzibur did the rabbi say a woman cannot be included in one of the seven aliyahs.
So what you're saying then is that originally a woman could, but then the rabbis instituted things that they can't. But you have that with other areas too. I mean, women, you know, probably I would think that there were things that women were allowed to do biblically that the rabbis then came in and said, no, it's time bound, it's whatever. I mean, you don't find issues in the Torah forbidding women to do things because of it's time bound. That's a rabbinic construct. So isn't this just also a rabbinic construct?
Right. That's what I said. God never said it.
God never said it.
I'm gonna work on the basis that rabbinic Judaism is not an offshoot from biblical Judaism, but is representing what they used to practice before the rabbis elaborate on it. If you want to get into historical class on whether it's true or not.
Well, come on. How about like polygamy? I mean, we know that the rabbis changed things.
Oh, that's much. So the rabbis, though, acknowledge that polygamy was okay. Just at a much later stage, there were rabbis post-Gemara who came along and said that, you know what, we're going to ban polygamy. That's
right,
different.
But it works the other way, too. It's not only, you know, rabbinic intervention is not just one directional.
So just to clarify the source, I don't think it means that there was a time when women lained Torah and then the rabbis came along and said it's usser. This isn't a chronological statement. This is the way, I mean, I understand what it's saying, is that halakhically, I would think that a woman or child could get an aliyah to the Torah, but because of Kavodat Tzibur, that's why it was never permitted. They're explaining something that has been the case for a while. They're not saying back that, I mean, it just doesn't read like that. It doesn't say back in the day, women used to lane, and now we're stopping because of Kavodat Tzibur. They're explaining why that is already the phenomenon, that women and children are not getting aliyahs to the Torah.
So then you're saying they never did.
Never did. Or if they did, you would need another source because it doesn't indicate.
But this source seems to say exactly the opposite. It seems to be saying they did.
Maybe you could tell me how you're reading it because maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Well, because when I said, because that was your point, that you were pointing it out to me that this source says women did it.
So let me clarify my reading because maybe I misrepresented it. Unless someone has an alternative reading of the source, what it's saying is that on a strict, as far as Kriyas HaTorah, the laws of reading Torah are concerned, women can read from the Torah. But there's
when can they read from the Torah?
On Shabbos.
In Shul. On Shabbos.
During regular laning.
You're not just saying in theory, you're saying women can.
Yeah. Well, you have to read as one statement. I'm breaking it down. But it's saying is that if I were to isolate the laws of Kriyas HaTorah, I would think that a woman or child could get an aliyah. But the rabbis say, you have to remember that there is a broader concern called Kavodat Tzibur, which precludes that us using that permissibility. That's the statement that they're making over here.
And it's not because the woman is not obligated in Torah? That's not the reason?
It's not because what? I mean, the woman is not obligated in Torah. So yeah, that's the point I'm making here, is that they're not bringing up that issue that that a woman is in chayiv. They're saying is that as far as his chayiv is concerned, and this might go back to our discussion from last time, that reading the Torah might be a communal obligation. So it might not be directly connected to the individual obligation to study Torah lishma. But anyway,
Something?
Yes, Lloyd.
Voice from the wilderness. You know, I wonder, these rules were promulgated in probably before 1900, you might say. I think that's reasonable. But however, women's education, Jewish education, by the way, didn't really get started into the early 20th century. Am I correct on that? And so that maybe these rules were promulgated on the idea that the women were not Torah educated to be able to read the Torah and have an aliyah.
Well,
perspective.
Well, I would say I think I see what you're going down. That last detail might just need a little bit polishing, which is, I think the point you're getting to is that in today's society, it's not like where only men got an education and women do not get an education, but today women have an education and are participating as equal members of the community. So I think the point you're bringing up is that should this change, should it no longer be considered a lack of kavod hatzibur to have someone who is educated doing this, regardless of their gender, right? Is that your point, Lloyd?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. So if that is the only consideration.
Didn't some of this have to do with female cycles too?
I don't think so. There is a, you know, for a separate shiur, literally I have a separate shiur on this about the debate about women dancing with Torahs and Simchas Torah. I know in our community it's passe, it's not much of a discussion, but it caused a huge hullabaloo among the poskim. So, you know, there is like this Kabbalistic idea that a woman is a nida, she should, and she had her period, she shouldn't hold a Torah. But
you couldn't make a Torah tameh. You cannot make a Torah tameh.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not, I don't think that's the issue over here.
Okay.
So, okay, this is going to be a wild source, and I have a meeting at 9 o'clock, so we're just going to have to stop by 8:55. If anyone needs to log off now, you're welcome to. I just want to finish this. So if this first source we saw already got you a little upset, this next one is not going to make you any more happy. So again, I am not necessarily presenting my own ideas. I'm just reading to you a source. And again, you'll make of it what you will. All right. So this is the Chacham Shlomo on Shulchan Aruch. He deals with a question. If we go back to the story of Tanakh, we remember there were two co-wives. So there, one of them was Botel Chana, one of them was Chana. So Chana and Penina. So Chana was not able to have children. Eventually she has Shmuel. That's only after she pours out her heart before God at the Mishkan, at the tabernacle. So the thing is, we actually learned from her that you're supposed to daven Shmona Esrei silently to yourself, because she davened silently to herself. So Eli, who was the Kohen Gadol, walked by and saw her davening to herself. And he said, you know, he thought that she was inebriated, because aren't you supposed to daven out loud? And the question that comes from this whole story is that, well, if, you know, Chana is revealing to us, we're just pointing that as an example of how you're supposed to pray, and you're supposed to pray silently. Why did Eli think it was a problem that Chana was praying silently? That's the way you're supposed to pray, Shmona Esrei. So what was the problem over here with her davening silently to herself, if that is how you're expected to pray? That's the question that the Chacham Shlomo brings up. And to answer this, it's, well, again, I braced you already, so no more need for trigger warnings. Lefinius Daiti. Asi Shaper of Himach and Kasab Yakut Shmoni and Parshas Chanan, Kimi Goy Godal Sherlo, Lehim Krovim may love, So who is this great nation that is close to God, referring to the Jews? Bo re'e malach yashares korim b'kol gadol. The malach yashares, those who are the angels, they have to call out in this great voice. Why did these angels have to call out to God in a loud voice? Because God is distant from them. Aval adam Yisrael, when it comes to a Jewish person, but a Jewish person who is very close to God, God's presence is close to them, they don't have to yell out for God to hear them. They could speak even silently in prayer, and God will listen. Why is that? Shekadosh Baruch Hu karov etzlo, because God is close to him. So here's the thing. You know one of the like apologetics that they give to women in usually in like the more right-wing places about why don't women have as many mitzvahs as men? So it's because why? What's the common apologetic we all hear?
They don't need them.
Yeah, women are better.
They don't need them. Why?
Women are better.
They're given a higher...
because they're already closer to God, right? Right? That's what you usually hear? So get ready. This is going to be the antithesis of that. This is the antithesis of that apologetic.
I don't have to believe it.
Yeah, you don't have to, but I'm just going to present it, and you can make of it what you will again. Someone whose God's presence is close to them, they are able to pray silently. But someone who's more distant from God, God's not as close to them, they have to daven aloud, in a louder voice. So since it's a lack of dignity for God to be near women, and it's only dignified for God to remain near men, therefore it was expected for Chana to be speaking, to be talking to God in a raised voice. So when Eli walked by and saw that she was davening silently, he said, is this woman inebriated? What's wrong? Doesn't she know that women are expected to be davening out loud to God and men daven silently? Which, by the way, I know this sounds like the most right-wing fundamentalist, you know, thing against women possible. But when you think about it, this basically says that if you're in a really frum shul, really the men should be the ones who are silent and the women should be the one davening out loud. That was just my har on there, by the way. But anyway, the point that's making here is that, so this idea is taken by, this is Rabbi Reisman, not the Rabbi Reisman of Farakwe that you might be thinking of, but a modern day scholar, he's alive today. He uses this to explain why you would not be able, even according to the more liberal opinions on Kavodat Tzibur, to be mochel, to forgo a breach on Kavod HaTzibur. When it comes to a woman getting an aliyah to the Torah, he says, since God in our imagery is likened to man, we use masculine language, that's how we think of God, even though, of course, he has no body. So therefore, it is not proper for God to be near a woman. And by the way, this isn't his own idea. Whether you like it or not, this is actually a source in Chazal. There's something called Misas Nashika, which is literally the kiss of death, which means that God, the way he took Moshe and Aaron's soul, was likened to a kiss. It was just a very easy passing for the soul of Moshe and Aaron to depart their bodies. But it doesn't use the term Mises Nashika when it comes to Miriam, their sister, even though that is objectively what happened. Why? Because I'll say it's not proper to use that language between God and between a woman, because again, God is a imagined or imagery as a man. So therefore, he says as follows: why does a woman go up to Lane? His idea is that Kavod HaTzibur is an objective standard for God, and based on this Chachma Shlomo we just saw that he cites, he says that it is not proper for God, who is understood to be a man, and for women to be within close proximity to one another. And therefore, he says that a congregation is not able to be mochel, is not able to forgo Kavod HaTzibur in order to give a woman an aliyah. So that is his general theory based on the Chachma Shlomo that we saw.
We'll
just take a deep breath for a second and say, this is an opinion out there. We don't have to agree with the opinion. but it is an approach out there, and I can see a number of us shaking our heads.
So against what I grew up with and was taught.
Oh, what were you taught, Phyllis?
Well, first of all, God ain't lo demut haguf, okay? So how can he be talking about God looking like a man? And we certainly know that God's attributes are feminine. So, you know, it's a very confusing thing to say, and I just kind of don't think it's proper to say that God looks like a man or has any kind of imagery that makes us think he's a man.
Okay. Oh, you know. Your point is well taken on that, Phyllis. I found a little puzzling myself.
Yeah, there is.
God has no gender.
Rabbi, I'd like to say that there is some perhaps biblical reference to this position, because God made Adam out of his own image. And out of Adam came Eve. So that in a way, God didn't create Eve from his own image either. But Eve was made indirectly through Adam. So in a way, this is somewhat supporting this position.
I would say, you know, you could definitely marshal a number of sources in support of that. Okay, I can see there's some fight between you and your wife over there, so we'll let you guys duke it out.
I do agree because of the modesty of having a woman heard participating with men, and it might arouse men to have a woman in a not separated as we separate with Mechitza. Having a woman participate in such an activity would excite the men in the congregation, and that's why I think it's not a good idea.
All right. Well, that's, you know, you definitely are in good company with that idea. I'm sure there are many rabbis that would agree with you on that.
Well, if you want to say that reading the Torah is Kol Isha, then, you know, there's another.
Well, actually, so, you know, Phyllis, I'm so glad you brought that up, because you know what? This is actually a really great source to tell us that laning might not be Kol Isha. Because if it was Kol Isha, why did the rabbis not raise that issue when it came to laning?
Well, so they didn't have Tamim. I don't know.
Tamim go back pretty far, but I mean, I think they had Tamim then. I think they had some sort of chant or melody. So actually, what I would say from here is that perhaps a woman laning or doing a chant doesn't constitute Kol Isha. By the way, I was wondering, there's a rabbi on my Facebook who is more to the right than I am, and I would never imagine him listening to Kol Isha, but he shared, this woman did like a slam poetry thing one time in his community, and he shared that on his Facebook wall. And I was like really puzzled, but now I said, you know what? Maybe he thinks slam poetry, like rap, doesn't constitute music, so there's no issue with Kol Isha.
I certainly agree with that.
About the rap, right?
Yeah. Rap is not music.
It wasn't a leniency in Kol Isha. It was really just him excoriating rap music. That was really what it came to. Anyway, I know we just delved into, I just opened up a Pandora's box about men and women and social change and all that fun stuff that we always love to discuss. Why did I bring this all up? Because I want us to understand Tirchut Tzibur and Kavod HaTzibur. We talked about if Kavod HaTzibur is something that is malleable, something that's flexible, that if we have the prerogative to forgo. When we talked about a child, we said, you know what? A child, there's nothing wrong. We don't have anything against that 13-year-old boy leading davening, but he would not be put up as a leader of the congregation when we are advocating for communal needs. Now, if I were to take that reason applied here, well, if that's the sole criterion, we do have women in, leadership positions in the community. I mean, well, we have Toby with us, of course, who do advocate for our needs. So if that is the sole reason, then yeah, maybe a child we still can't appoint as our chazen, because children we still don't appoint as leaders in our community. But if it's all about a question of leadership, and if you would put this person in front of a government leader to advocate for you, then there's nothing wrong with putting them before God as your advocate. But if there are other considerations that maybe just there are objective standards within Judaism, within worship, that men and women are supposed to be separate, and then men do certain things, women do certain things, then it's much harder to make the argument. It's possible even those who are more liberal on covet at Seaboard may have to draw the line somewhere. Anyway, there is so much literature on this one topic over here. Rabbi Sperber, Rabbi Weider, Rabbi Clapper, all the people you see on Modern Orthodox Facebook, if you're ever on there. So they all have their articles, and you can easily find them online. Maybe we'll save this for a shiur another time. I only brought in these sources insofar as they're relevant to Covet HaTzibor. Anyway, we didn't get to our second source. You will see that for another time. God willing, if I have the privilege of continuing this, we'll talk about, well, how much time needs to actually pass? What actually is a good example of taking up the Tzibor's time and imposing on their Tirchut Tzibura? Anyway, we're out of time. I have a Baal Tefillah meeting in 2 minutes. So I thank you all for coming this evening. And again, I know that there is material in here that some of us agree with, some of us have a hard time agreeing with, but I appreciate all of you being good sports about it and being open to hearing different sides of the debate. And at the end of the day, it's all Torah. So
thank you so much. Everyone. Thank you.
Baruch
HaTzima Tova.
Baruch HaTzima Tova, yes.
To everybody.